Hi, this is Cale Clark. Welcome to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio mobile app. I'm so glad that you're with me today for this journey of exploring, understanding, explaining, and defending our Catholic faith.
We were talking about Daniel a few days ago. We took a little bit of a detour to talk about some other subjects, but lo and behold, Daniel will return today. Just like James Bond, Daniel will return, and here he is. And so we're going to look at Daniel chapter 3. There are two big questions that are really important for us today. What is really behind idolatry? Idolatry is not something that only occurred in the ancient world. It happens every day. It happens in our lives too. We're tempted to it. But when you take away that mask of idolatry, whose face is underneath? You might be surprised. You might be surprised. We're going to learn today about Daniel's three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and how they were thrown into the fiery furnace. This is one of the most famous tales in the Old Testament and in the book of Daniel. And yet there is someone else in the fire, one who looks like a son of the gods. Is that a pre-incarnate appearance of Jesus Christ? We're going to talk about that as we go along. But let's open our Bibles now to Daniel chapter 3. Here's what it says. King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold, 90 feet high and 9 feet wide, and set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. He then summoned the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials to come to the dedication of the image he had set up. So the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials assembled for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up, and they stood before it. Now, just let me interject something right here. There's going to be a bit of repetition as we read this. All these government officials are going to be mentioned again and again. Daniel's not trying to annoy us here, the book of Daniel, the writer of Daniel. This is to have the effect of ratcheting up the tension here. What is going to happen to Daniel's friends? Okay, so just keep that in mind. Let's pick it up again. Verse 4. Then the herald loudly proclaimed, "This is what you are commanded to do, O peoples, nations, and men of every language. As soon as you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and all kinds of music, you must fall down and worship the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Whoever does not fall down and worship will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace." Therefore, as soon as they heard the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, and all kinds of music, the peoples, nations, and men of every language fell down and worshipped the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. At this time, some astrologers came forward and denounced the Jews. They said to King Nebuchadnezzar, "O king, live forever. You have issued a decree, O king, that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harps, pipes, and all kinds of music must fall down and worship the image of gold, and that whoever does not fall down and worship will be thrown into a blazing furnace. But there are some Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who pay no attention to you, O king. They neither serve your gods nor worship the image of gold you have set up." Furious with rage, Nebuchadnezzar summoned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So these men were brought before the king, and Nebuchadnezzar said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the image of gold I have set up? Now, when you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and all kinds of music, if you are ready to fall down and worship the image I made, very good. But if you do not worship it, you will be thrown immediately into a blazing furnace. Then what god will be able to rescue you from my hand?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to save us from it, and he will rescue us from your hand, O king. But even if he does not, We want you to know, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar was furious with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and his attitude toward them changed. He ordered the furnace heated 7 times hotter than usual, and commanded some of the strongest soldiers in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and throw them into the blazing furnace. So these men, wearing their robes, trousers, turbans, and other clothes, were bound and thrown into the blazing furnace. The king's command was so urgent and the furnace so hot that the flames of the fire killed the soldiers who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and these 3 men, firmly tied, fell into the blazing furnace. Okay, let me just stop here and interject something. Now, in Catholic Bibles, right after this, there is a beautiful prayer by one of the 3 men thrown into the firing furnace, the prayer of Azariah. And so that's included. And also after that comes the Song of the 3 Young Men. Again, a beautiful prayer. And many Catholics are in the habit of praying this prayer as part of their thanksgiving after Mass. But I'm not going to do, just for the sake of time and brevity, I won't be able to read those prayers, but I do encourage you to look at those in the text. They make beautiful prayers that you can use on your own as well. And this is part of what's unique about Catholic Bibles. Non-Catholic Bibles, Protestant Bibles, actually remove these verses from the book of Daniel, along with some other books in the Old Testament. They're known to Protestants as the Apocrypha. We call them the Deuterocanonical books. Deuterocanonical comes from the Deuterocanon, which means second canon. So that's what that means. So I'm going to skip over those wonderful verses, but I do encourage you to read them devotionally on your own. Let's return now to what happened after Daniel's 3 friends were thrown into the blazing furnace. In verse 24 of Daniel chapter 3, "Then King Nebuchadnezzar leaped to his feet in amazement and asked his advisors, 'Weren't there 3 men that we tied up and threw into the fire?' They replied, 'Certainly, O king.' He said, 'Look, I see 4 men walking around in the fire, unbound and unharmed, and the 4th looks like a son of the gods.' Nebuchadnezzar then approached the opening of the blazing furnace and shouted, 'Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out, come here.' So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the fire, and the satraps, prefects, governors, and royal advisors crowded around them. They saw that the fire had not harmed their bodies, nor was a hair of their heads singed. Their robes were not scorched, and there was no smell of fire on them. Then Nebuchadnezzar said, 'Praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and rescued his servants. They trusted in him and defied the king's command and were willing to give up their lives rather than serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I decree that the people of any nation or language who say anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be cut into pieces and their houses be turned into piles of rubble. For no other god can save in this way.' Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon." You're listening to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. I'm your host, Cale Clark. That was Daniel chapter 3. Now, this famous chapter in the book of Daniel really is one unit unto itself. It's a complete account. It's a complete incident that kind of stands on its own, but it does fit into the book as a whole. And obviously, we're still dealing with King Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon. We were introduced to him in the last episode and in Daniel chapter 2, the last time we talked about Daniel. We saw that Daniel interpreted the king's dream, and that dream was, incidentally, of a statue. And here we have King Nebuchadnezzar actually building this massive statue. And a lot of people think the statue was of the king himself, right? Remember, in his dream, the head of gold in the statue was representing him and his kingdom. And this statue that Nebuchadnezzar actually builds in real life is 90 feet high and 9 feet wide. This is absolutely massive. And some scholars of the Bible have even said, come on, this can't be real. This couldn't have really happened, because we know that the ancients had idols, but they were never this big. I'm not so sure about that. I'm not so sure you can dismiss it just like that, because don't forget the Colossus of Rhodes, and I'm sure you've heard about that. It was one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. It was a statue about this size. And the Colossus of Rhodes, of course, was built by the next kingdom that came in world history after the Babylonians, the Persians. So I don't think it's out of place at all. But some people think that the statue is of the king himself. Others say that it's merely representing one of the gods that the king worshipped. So I think that's probably the more likely explanation here. But we do know that it was made of gold. Now, it doesn't mean the whole thing was gold. That would have been a lot of gold. But it was probably gold-plated. Nonetheless, as a test of loyalty, King Nebuchadnezzar wants everybody in the kingdom to fall down and worship before this idol. Why was he doing that? Well, he's probably trying to consolidate his power all across his growing and expanding kingdom. That's why all these government officials are named in this story. But one thing is true. The worshipers of the one true and living God, the friends of Daniel, they could never do such a thing. They were Jews. They only worshipped the living God. And so they were going to be in trouble if they didn't do this. Now, the text doesn't tell us. Daniel doesn't tell us whether these guys made a big deal about this or not and said, nope, we're not going to do it, and protested in public. There's no record of that. And we can't really make too many pronouncements where the Bible itself is silent on the issue, but it seems like they just kind of went about their business and they just didn't participate in the idolatry that was going on. However, they were quickly pointed out by some of their adversaries. And who were they? Well, this text, and by the way, this translation that I was reading from is from the New International Version. I find it's a very readable translation of the book of Daniel. It says, some astrologers, in verse 8, kind of pointed the finger at Daniel's friends, who kind of turned them in to the authorities. Why? Well, they were probably jealous of Daniel and his friends. Don't forget, as we saw back in Daniel chapter 1, when Daniel and his friends were deported from Jerusalem by the Babylonians. They were taken to Babylon, and they were the best and the brightest of the people of Israel, the young people of Israel. And so they were put in Babylonian training schools, and they aced their exams. They graduated at the top of their class. And that was really embarrassing to the native Babylonian astrologers. They were beaten at their own game by these Jews, and they were just enraged and inflamed with jealousy. And they wanted them to be turned over to the flames of the fiery furnace. Professional jealousy. One of the things that we see here is that this is one of really the great theme of the book of Daniel, is that no matter how things look, humanly speaking, no matter how things are appearing, God is still on the throne. God is still ultimately in control, despite the way things look. We've got to remember that in our own lives as well. Now, a lot of people ask the question, where is Daniel? In this chapter, Daniel himself does not appear. Well, as we saw back in chapter 2, when Daniel correctly named the king's dream and then interpreted it, the king was so thankful, King Nebuchadnezzar. He said, you know, what can I do for you? And Daniel requested that his friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, he said, why don't you appoint these guys administrators over the province of Babylon? And so that's what he did. And Daniel himself stayed in the royal court. So that kind of explains why they weren't together. But again, these other professional astrologers, these Babylonians, turn in Daniel's three friends to the king because they are not there. They are not present and accounted for when everybody has to gather and worship statue. And it's really insidious what they do. As Tremper Longman says, they really play to the king's sense of vanity. And so they're basically saying to the king, you know, these three Jews are actually, this is a personal offense to you, O king. You're the one who said everybody's got to worship this statue, and you're the one who said everyone needs to worship upon penalty of death, you know, or else you'll be thrown into this blazing furnace. And by the way, for most of the Babylonians, that wasn't a big deal at all. This is a polytheistic culture. That means that they worshipped many, many gods. And for most of them, hey, so the king builds a statue, it's of some god, all right, I'll just add another one to the pantheon, who cares? It wouldn't have bothered them at all. But of course, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, again, they know that there is only one real god, their god. And so this is how their enemies kind of set them up. They say, king, this is a personal attack on you. Here's a quote from them. These rebels pay no attention to you, O king. They neither serve your gods or worship the image of gold that you have set up. And, you know, they're very smart about how they went about accusing these three guys. And so the king, of course, he is enraged by this. Yeah, you're right. They need to pay. They need to pay. And some people ask the question, well, hang on here. At the end of chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar seems so happy with Daniel and Daniel's God that, not that he's a believer in the one true God, but he certainly respects Daniel's God. How does he change all of a sudden? Why does he want to now, you know, throw these guys in the fiery furnace? Well, this speaks to the fickleness of humans, right? I mean, people can sometimes go back on their word, their promises. And even in our own lives, we can forget about things that God has done for us. And, you know, we want to fall back into a lifestyle of sin. And it's basically, you know, thumbing our nose at God. And so it's not surprising that Nebuchadnezzar, some time has passed, has kind of forgotten about all this. And anyways, he brings the three before him. And he actually sets up a very dramatic scene in which a personal, they get in front of everybody, they have to, in front of the king, they have to personally bow down and worship this idol. And the band strikes up. And by the way, what's with all these instruments, pipes, the zither? When's the last time you played a zither? The lyre, the harp, all kinds of music. That's kind of striking up the band, pomp and circumstance. This is a, you know, they're making a big, big deal out of this. And so they get their own personal musical intro to the worship they're supposed to give. And the king says this at the end, hey, if you don't do this, I'm going to chuck you into the fiery furnace, and what God will be able to rescue you from my hand? Basically, what he's saying is that I have more authority than any god. I am more powerful than any god. This is the height of pride, putting yourself on the throne. And a lot of people ask the question, you know, what really is idolatry? What is it really? We know the commandment. And this comes to us, of course, from the book of Exodus, when Moses is given the Ten Commandments. You can read, one of the places you can read about this is in Exodus chapter 20. You shall have no other gods before me, says the one true and living God. You shall not make for yourself an idol in the form of anything in heaven above, or on the earth beneath, or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God. And not that God is giving into the petty sin of jealousy, but he's saying, I deserve your full allegiance, your full obedience, because I am the real God. And by the way, I have your best interests at heart too. So what is idolatry really? It's basically confusing the creation with the creator. It's taking something that's in the creation and putting it on par with God, or maybe even more important than God. And there was one writer who used to put it this way, who is sitting on the throne of your heart? Whatever is of ultimate concern to you, and that could be an item, it could be your car, it could be money, it could be mammon, it could be the god of mammon, right? It could be another person, it could be your spouse, it could be a child, it could be another relative, it could be anybody or anything, really. Whatever is of ultimate concern, that is really, in effect, your God. And so if it's not God, the one true and living God who's sitting on the throne of your heart, then maybe you've fallen prey to this or been tempted to do so. And so this is one thing that Daniel's friends are never, ever going to give in to. So when they're before the king and he gives them this option, he probably couldn't believe that they were responding to him this way. It almost sounds arrogant. They said, "Oh, king, we do not need to defend ourselves before you." What do you mean you don't? Of course you do. But then they continue on and say, "If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to save us from it, and he will rescue us from your hand, O king. But even if he does not, we want you to know, O king, we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up." So they have full confidence in God that he can save them and that he will if he wants to. But they say, even if he doesn't, even if we do perish for the sake of his name, it doesn't matter. We're still not going to do, even if we're burned to a crisp, we are not going to do this terrible idolatrous deed that you want us to. And that's really, really important, because we do know that throughout salvation history, in this case, we know the end of the story. We do know that God rescues these three, but many other faithful saints and heroes in the Old and New Testament time, God has chosen not to rescue them. In his wisdom, he has chosen not to. Could have, but he didn't. There is a long list of martyrs in salvation history, and Jesus himself referred to these. All the righteous blood, Jesus said, that's been shed from righteous Abel all the way down to the prophets just before his time, many of whom were murdered by the religious authorities. And their blood cries out, right? And Jesus himself gave his life, and he was resurrected. He was not spared the ignominy of martyrdom. But God raised him. And so the story isn't over for all those who gave their lives for the truth of God. There is the resurrection at the end of time. And Daniel's friends, they didn't necessarily have a theology of the resurrection. Now, later on in Daniel chapter 12, of course, there is that famous statement about the resurrection. Many who sleep, multitudes who sleep in the dust of the earth will awake, some to glory and some to shame and everlasting contempt. And so, but they had faith in God, which is pretty amazing considering they didn't have the whole picture. They didn't have the teaching of Christ. They didn't have all the answers, but they knew who they trusted in, and God was faithful to them. Well, of course, the king, Nebuchadnezzar, became furious at Daniel's friends for not worshiping the statue, and so he orders the furnace to be superheated. And this really reflects his own burning anger. In the text, it actually says his attitude towards them changed, and it actually could be translated, as Tremper Longman points out, the image of his face changed. He and his pride created an image, and he wanted absolute loyalty. And now his own image is just marred beyond his control. He's so full of anger. And of course, Daniel's three friends are thrown in. And the great irony is that the fire is so hot that the soldiers, some of the strongest soldiers in his army, they throw the men into the fire. They themselves are killed by the flames. They were loyal to this pagan king, and it meant their death. Whereas ironically, the three young men are thrown into the blazing flames, loyal and faithful to God, and they are unharmed. And so Nebuchadnezzar sees, maybe through an opening in the side, this would have been a very, very large structure. And maybe there's an open window in which he can watch what's happening. And he says, through the haze, through the flames, "I see four men walking around in the fire, unbound and unharmed, and the fourth looks like a son of the gods." And so he has them brought up, "Bring them out, bring them out." And the question was, who was that fourth individual? Now later on, Nebuchadnezzar actually says it's God's angel. At first he says it's like someone like a son of the gods. Now he says it's God's angel who rescued you in verse 28. So some theologians, some interpreters have seen this fourth individual in the fire as a pre-incarnate appearance of Jesus. I don't think that's the case. I think it is an angel of the Lord, which, but at any rate, it represents God's presence with the three men in the midst of their crisis. And that's good news for us as well, because whatever we're going through, we know that God is with us. And that's really, in some ways, the point of the incarnation, that God enters into our human existence and even all the suffering, having suffered himself and died on the cross. And so, at the end of the day, it's another irony is that Nebuchadnezzar profusely apologizes for what he's done. And he says, hey, if anybody says anything against this God that they worship, that person's going to be torn to pieces. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they actually get another promotion, much to the chagrin of the guys who tattled on them in the first place and tried to destroy their lives. They actually get a promotion out of this. How about that? All right, let's relate this Old Testament account to our modern world, because the Word of God is always living and active, sharper than any two-edged sword, as the letter to the Hebrews puts it. There are many idols in the modern world as well, and we're usually not dragged into the public square, asked to bow down to a statue, but that doesn't mean that we're not tempted to worship idols. Well, whatever those modern idols might be, whether it's worship of money, a worship of sensuality, power, no matter what they may be, no matter who's sitting on the throne of your heart, when you unmask the idol, who's really there looking back at you in the mirror? Yourself. The idea of putting yourself in God's place is really the original temptation. This is what the devil tried to tempt our first parents with. Eat the fruit, and you too shall be as gods. Friedrich Nietzsche, the atheist philosopher whose ideas are so powerful, even in our modern world today, so many have succumbed to them. He just couldn't bear the idea that there wouldn't be a God other than him. Here's what he wrote to his friends. Let me reveal my heart to you entirely, my friends. If there were gods, he wrote, how could I endure not to be a God? Hence, there are no gods. He couldn't conceive that there would be a God greater than himself, but there is. And he is the living God, and we see his face in Jesus Christ, the one that St. Paul called the image of the invisible God. Only he is due our ultimate loyalty. That's all the time we have for today, but if you have a question about the Catholic faith, I'll try to answer it on the air. You can send it to me via email. The address is faith@relevantradio.com, faith@relevantradio.com, or you can try to get your question to me on the X app. My handle is @CaleClark. I'll be with you later today at 5 p.m. Central for the Cale Clark Show live on Relevant Radio, and I'll see you in the next episode of The Faith Explained. God bless.